many, many things to talk about in the world. And, of course, everyone is focusing on now, for the most part, Kosovo, understandably. It is time to take a look at Kosovo and some of the things that it might mean, or what is happening in Kosovo and the NATO attack on Yugoslavia, etc., and what it might mean to the bigger picture in some very key areas in the world. Imran Anwar is founder of Imran Net Services in New York. He is a pioneer of internet email in Pakistan, also a well-known media expert analyst on India, Pakistan, Southeast Asia, and he is with us now on the Business Line. Hi, Imran.
Hi, George.
Well, you know, there's a lot of talk about Kosovo and what it might mean to various parts of the world, particularly Europe. Some have mentioned some other things as well, but for the most part, I haven't heard anyone talk about what the impact might, what impact it might have on just that region and going east, maybe into, for that matter, Pakistan and some other very sensitive areas of the east. What is your assessment, first of all, of what impact we might see, how much spreading we're going to see this impact have on the region and moving east?
That is an excellent question, George, because the issue that it brings up is related more to what is happening in that whole market and in that whole region, and that's what you have to be cognizant of. And obviously, whatever is happening in this particular area has to be watched very carefully for the impact it will have in other areas around there. Obviously, there can be two different levels of analysis that can be done. One is obviously to see the areas that are right next to Kosovo. So obviously, if something happens in Kosovo, you'll be beginning to see some spillover into neighboring countries, you know, both in the form of protests and obviously also in the form of refugees taking, you know, finding a safe haven in other countries, which may not be economically or politically or socially geared to be able to handle the influx. So that is an immediate impact we're beginning to feel right away. Now, the secondary level impact that we're beginning to see is the Russian, obviously, action or reaction to this whole episode. Mm-hmm. And that includes their deciding not to have any more dealings with NATO for the moment, and also beginning to send some, quote, humanitarian aid into Yugoslavia. Now, that in itself can be seen in two different contexts. One, obviously, is from the context of, oh, my God, are we at the verge of another war or a Cold War, if not, or of a larger, more serious issue? Or secondly, it can be perceived for what I think is more likely the case, that the Soviets are trying to save face both at home and also among their old allies in what used to be Eastern Europe and Yugoslavia in particular. So what they might be trying to do is basically to show that we are not the power or superpower of yesteryear. We still have something to say in world affairs. And at the same time, let's not forget, they are doing this with their hands stretched towards the West, literally, if not figuratively, begging for money to survive. And so I would be concerned about the Russian reaction, but I would not consider that this was ominous of more dangerous things to come.
Well, now let me ask then, what about the potential for this kind of activity and the fact that so much effort is being deflected in that area and how emotional it is? I mean, there are tremendous divisions around the world over what's happening and why and what should be done and who's on what side and so on and so forth. What are the implications? Now, I recognize that Yugoslavia is nowhere near Pakistan or India or any of those areas of the world. I mean, you've got major separations there, you know. But that doesn't mean it's not, they're not acutely aware of what's going on and very sensitive to it. What is the emotion, say, in Pakistan right now over this, as far as your assessment goes?
That's an excellent question, George, and that's one of the things I've always, in my previous conversations with you and with other media professionals, one something I have always complained about is that policymakers do not see the implications through into the tertiary level analysis, basically is how I could define it. Mm-hmm. Now, when you look at the Pakistan-India territory in general, it sends a couple of different messages. In this particular case, it happens to be a positive message. One, these two regions, these two countries have been known to go to war, and since they're both nuclear powers, the risk of them getting into a fight over Kashmir, for example, an issue that should have been resolved through United Nations resolutions a long time ago, the message is clear, is that you better listen. Not that the U.S. is now the global police policeman or the responsible for managing expectations or managing solutions to problems that nobody else can solve. But it does send a message that you need to get your act together. Otherwise, if you are going to have an impact that destabilizes anything around you, then you need a solution that can be implemented on your own, or it will be implemented for you. Now, that is the message that this whole thing has sent out, and which is a good message, because on the one hand, you want people to know that, yes, it's in your own interest to solve the problem yourself, but if you don't do it and you are a threat to you know, the areas around you, then something will be done for you.
Uh-huh.
Now, that's the first level direct or indirect message.
And you're talking about now, just to make it clear, because we're jumping around country to country, we're talking about the impression and the psychological impact on Pakistan and India right now.
Absolutely.
This NATO move. Okay.
Exactly. That is as far as direct action being taken on solving mm-hmm. one particular problem at any given moment. And that is the impact that we are talking about right now. Now, obviously, once that is not the only area where problems exist.
Now, let me just, before we go past that, though, let me just ask, where are the emotional connections? What is the, you know, most of the countries around the world somehow have an emotional reaction to what's going on, either because they somehow associate themselves with the Serbs or with the Kosovars. What is the emotional connection then to whom of Pakistan and India to this region, if any?
That is an excellent question, and that is what I was going to come to next,
uh-huh.
is that not only do we have the direct message in terms of solve your own problems,
mm-hmm.
but we also have the message that even when it takes a long time for action to be taken on solving a problem,
mm-hmm.
it's better late than never. You would wish it had been solved earlier rather than later, but at least it's being solved.
Yeah.
So it sent two kinds of positive messages as far as I'm concerned and as far as I can see happening on the ground in countries like Pakistan.
Yeah, Pakistan and India are kind of in the same boat here, although they are often at odds, in terms of how you are assessing what the impact is of the NATO action on Yugoslavia, both in terms of the message of to them about getting your act together and doing it well and doing it right and doing it without needing world interference, and also showing that even though it may take a while, the powers that be, when I say we, I mean the powers that be in the world, ultimately do take action that they find to be the proper action. Is that what you're telling me?
Right. Actually, the even one level further than that, George, the very positive impact of this will be that one of the biggest criticisms that's been leveled against U.S. foreign policy and NATO in general, mm-hmm. or the West, or the white Christian countries, or whatever
right.
you may want to
right.
you know lump mm-hmm. countries together as, is that when Bosnian Muslims were getting killed for literally years, there was a lot of talk, and it, you know, people dragged their feet, and eventually there was some action.
Yeah.
But in the case of Iraq, things happened like overnight. You know, Mr. Clinton says, "Let's bomb them." Boom. Next day, you were bombing.
But of course, I understand. Of course, and the problem with that assessment is, but it's understandable. But the problem with that assessment is, we were defending. It wasn't white Christians or Westerners of any bent that we were defending in the original actions,
oh,
or even currently. But I understand what you're saying, but here's what's confusing to me. The Pakistanis are mostly Muslim.
Absolutely.
So their sympathies would lie with, in the Bosnian situation, their sympathies would lie with the Muslims against
right.
the Serbs.
Right.
But India,
uh-huh.
though neither Muslim primarily or necessarily whatever the Serbs are,
right.
or some Christian group,
right.
they have a close kind of emotional tie with the Soviet Union during the Cold War days, and
correct.
Maybe therefore close tie with Russia, which does that put them in the Serb camp emotionally, or where are they?
Emotionally, because remember that even with the 20% minority that India has of Muslims,
mm-hmm.
it's a bigger Muslim country than Pakistan is,
uh-huh,
with
yes,
its 120
well, that's
million
right.
people.
That's right, yeah.
So that's one. The second is that...
But they're kind of an unhappy minority in India. I mean, if they make too much noise, there's an awful lot of backlash usually.
Right, absolutely.
Yeah.
So one of the things you will notice is that India will be kind of in an awkward situation in this particular example, and that will be that how do you... So India, actually, you will have even noticed, has not made many statements on mm-hmm. this issue at present.
But would they're leaning be in the direction of the Serbs, or are they kind of neutral? Do you think they are neutral on this one? What do you think?
Right now, I think they're biding their time, and before they commit to either solution, to either a party, basically.
But I am correct that the Pakistanis would be anti-Serb because of the actions that have gone on for so long in Bosnia.
Absolutely, and that is going to have a very positive impact both in that region and also in any area that you are trying to manage remotely from here.
Now, what would happen in Yugoslavia in this NATO action that would be a big negative for the region we're talking about, particularly Pakistan and India right now? What kind of a resolution would be a big negative for them?
Okay, for example, you're trying to manage a relationship from here. Let's say you have some sort of a presence, let's say, in the Soviet Union, and you are trying to manage that from here. Mm-hmm. In the meantime, you are trying to say that we can best decide how to solve your problems. Mm-hmm. Then that does not really fit into the bigger picture of shared management, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
So you might find that if the local managers do not have the ability to solve their own problems, they may say we want autonomy and we do not go for this one central management concept of one, like New York City making the decisions or Washington making the decisions. We would like to solve our problems locally, and you are now interfering. You are now coming into our area, and you are basically running on our platforms.
Would I be right also, Imran, that if the bombing failed and there was some kind of a breakdown in the NATO alliance, if there were cracks in the NATO alliance, in other words, if the thing ended badly that way, that would obviously send a very bad message to the world generally and clearly to these countries that you're talking about. But also, what about a resolution of the problem that would involve some kind of a compromise with Milosevic on autonomy with Kosovo that would virtually partition Kosovo, and everybody would want to kind of, and in other words, not what the Kosovars want, more what the Serbs want, but looks good on paper and we can save face. I'm trying to structure something like that, which I've heard that the skeptics think that might be what happens. What does that mean, if anything, to Pakistan and India?
Regardless of how the problem is solved, George, mm-hmm. the thing to remember is that an effort is being made to solve the problem.
I see.
And the positive message that you're sending out with that is that, it's some actions and reactions have taken longer. But overall, had this action not been taken, even if it doesn't yield the desired results, mm-hmm. the fact that action is being taken is doing a lot to ensure that you were not falling 180 degrees and even further away mm-hmm. in the other direction, which would have been, when it comes to one particular area, you start solving problems right away overnight,
uh-huh.
and in the other case, you start dragging your feet over and over again. That would have been much worse, and that would have spilled over. Let's say you have a problem in India-Pakistan like this. You could also even look at other markets in the region. For mm-hmm. example, you might be trying to manage a relationship, in another country, which is in Eastern Europe, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, because communication channels might not be open that same way, because you might not have the same presence or the same influence, you might not be able to impose your point of view or your management philosophy on them.
Yeah.
That could spill over both ways. So you have to be able to manage both relationships and to be able to do so looking fair. And one of the biggest things you and I have talked about in the past was that every time it had appeared to be a unilateral action against a certain type of, target state.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that is not the case anymore, because even if it doesn't go on the same amount, let's say that it went on for, say you were targeting Saddam Hussein.
Yeah.
But if it happens for the next few weeks, or even for the next few days, you are sending the message that there is centralized management of problems in a fair and objective manner in the context of managing real-world situations, not in terms of, let's say, who's the bad guy, solve this problem, but ignore this problem.
Well, let me ask about that. There, some of the criticism, and it's not unwarranted, one would think at least as a criticism it needs explanation, would be that we have not seen fit to go into Africa, in Rwanda, and the Congo, where the atrocities probably dwarf what has happened in Kosovo. And other areas, some people said even the we didn't see fit, obviously, to do anything to try to resolve the ethnic violence that took place in Indonesia and so on. What, and this is not the same as Bosnia, where we were asked in by what was basically an autonomous government to help resolve the situation. This is in essence a civil war, and I recognize Milosevic is a, you know, what his background is and why there is an emotional reality there. But this is basically a civil war. And again, not unlike some other parts of the world where maybe the atrocities have been worse, is there criticism in and concern in areas such as Pakistan and India and other parts of and parts of Southeast Asia, Indonesia and elsewhere, about that reality?
Actually, it would be the other way, George, because this situation is more similar to what is happening in, let's say, Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, when, let's say, a country like Iraq invades a country like Kuwait, and let's say the Kuwaitis bring you in to solve a problem, that is one thing. But once that problem is over, but the same bad guy is now hurting his own people,
yeah.
You go in and you go in at a moment's notice. When I say you, I mean, you know,
right.
We go in at a moment's notice. So now that you're dealing with the same bad guys, even if they're attacking their own local population, it's no different from what you're already doing in Iraq.
Am I correct, though, that does the world and the East particularly look at this as an internal problem that NATO is involved in because of NATO's proximity, most NATO's countries' proximity to Europe, and the problems that we know how these things have accelerated in the past in Europe and so on? That is an internal problem that NATO's getting involved in? Or do they look at this as Kosovo being actually a separate area that really has a legitimate right to be separate or to autonomy, and that we are kind of coming in at the behest of the Kosovars?
I mean, by that token, let's say the population of the city of Lahore in Pakistan mm-hmm. wanted mm-hmm. to get freedom from Pakistan for some reason.
Right, exactly.
Would you send the military troops in there? Probably not, because then you would be imposing upon sovereign states' internal rights.
Well, that's kind of what this debate is about on one level, sir.
Right, but that's what I'm saying, is that the fact that we're already doing this in Iraq doesn't mean shows that A, we're already doing this and had no compunction and had no discussion.
But the difference is, in all fairness, that we had a United Nations charter to do this, given the invasion of Iraq on Kuwait, asked in by Kuwait, then defeating Iraq. That was part of, in essence, a peace treaty agreement signed with Iraq that they would live up to certain things, and that was part of, again, under a United Nations charter. When they break that, when they don't do it, then we have the right under that charter to do something. But the United Nations has had a difficult time supporting this.
I agree. That is a very valid point that we also have to look at in the context of what historical action has been taken on other United Nations resolutions. For example, the best one that I can always mention is it's been 45 or 47 years now since the United Nations passed a resolution saying that the people of Kashmir, 97% or so Muslim, will have the right to decide their own fate, whether they want to join India or Pakistan.
Mm-hmm.
And 47 years later, not only has nobody gone in with troops to solve the problem, that whole subject doesn't even come up for discussion anymore, despite many attempts by Pakistan.
Clearly the most obscure resolution, as far as the average American is concerned, that there is, maybe. But you're right. So, but does this then raise the hope that something might be done, that the world might start becoming sensitive to these things and start looking to enforce some of these resolutions? Is that what you've said to me, that some of the impression is in Pakistan?
That's not even the impression as much, George, is that, well, the question is going to be raised. Right now what it has done is it has at least made sure that the risk there was of totally alienating not just Pakistan but other Muslim countries, not in just that region but also Africa and other parts of the world, the risk was that you would totally alienate them by saying Serbs can get away with murder, literally, but nothing was done. But when it's Saddam Hussein, who is a bad guy, everybody agrees,
right.
But he becomes a victim now.
I see what you're
saying.
At
least the total alienation is not going to happen.
Even-handed justice, or if nothing else, even-handed injustice, whichever way you want to look at it, even-handed. I see what you're saying. Very, very interesting, Imran. As always, thank you very much for joining us today.
The pleasure is mine, and I look forward to speaking to you again.
Thank you. Imran Anwar, founder of Imran Net Services in New York.